Today we're going to be talking about two case histories from Pathways to Pain Relief. The first is Therese, and the second one is Adrian. Therese is a, or was, when she first came into treatment, she was a 35-year-old investment banker, a patient of Dr. Sarno's, who referred her to Eric Sherman for individual psychotherapy. Her initial symptoms were that she had back pain after delivering twins. They were premature and via a C-section. The psychotherapy revealed extreme perfectionism. I think of her as Martha Stewart, basically. So she's an investment banker, incredibly demanding career. 4 months after giving birth to twins, she was working 60 hours a week as an investment banker, plus her house was spotless, so she was the perfect Martha Stewart housewife. There's frequent mentions in the case history of her folding napkins. She's, you know, that just sounds so Martha Stewart. And her husband, according to the case history, doesn't even want her to fold the napkins. Her husband doesn't care if the napkins are folded. You know, he is fine with Chinese takeout, it said. But that was something which couldn't, which her brain couldn't process at all. The psychotherapy revealed extreme perfectionism. Eric introduces this, Dr. Sherman introduces this by talking about how she couldn't even fathom being loved unless she was perfect in every imaginable way. She could not even fantasize about a state of affairs where she was imperfect but lovable. And when you read quotes like this from the book, I think it's important to recognize that he's talking often, or this is what helps me, is that he's talking in the language of the unconscious. On a conscious level, she may not be aware of that in the slightest, but on the unconscious level, that's how she's thinking, and that's what's driving her to be so perfectionist and to fold those napkins and to have such a perfect house.
That's the first thing that Dr. Sherman sees in her, although she's not aware of it. That immediately establishes the psychoanalytic dialogue because he's looking at her objectively. What he noticed about Adrienne, her goodest behavior, and the fact that she has gone out and consulted all of these forms and was certain that he would be very pleased that she had done all of this work for him. She was looking for approval where no approval was necessary. It was like, it's like she's giving herself away.
And you're talking about the insurance paperwork, right?
Yeah, that Adrienne filled out for Dr. Sherman. And let me see.
So insurance paperwork, obviously, when you're seeing a therapist, can be quite onerous, and she went through and did it all for him, even though he didn't ask for it. He would have been happy to do it for her. But you were saying that it gave her away?
Yeah, it gave her essential psychodynamic away, the way she was coping. What's that word? Emotionally repressive coping style that reveals the underlying tension. To the therapist right away. You know, he asks the obvious question. He sees the elephant in the room and says, why in the heck is she filling out all of these forms in such detail and looking for approval from me? Right. Is this her modus vivendi? Is this the way she lives? Is this like a précis of her personality?
Yeah.
And sometimes first impressions are like that. It really gives away a whole lot.
And there's so much information just in that simple piece of paper, you know, because why would she be doing that? And it almost even talks about her childhood. Like there's a lot of information about the childhood. Now, I should mention that there are two people in here. There's Therese, which is the first case history, and then there's Adrian, which is the second case history. Therese illustrates something that I think many of us TMSers have, which is perfectionism, and Adrian illustrates something that we also frequently have, which is goodism. Dr. Sherman is very clear that they are tightly interconnected. And that goodism is just perfectionism on a moral plane. As a perfectionist needs to be good at folding their napkins or being Martha Stewart, a goodist needs to be the perfect individual and can't even consider the idea of causing their therapist to have to fill out a form on their behalf.
It's like Eric Sherman stands aside after presenting Teresa's case and makes some overall statements about perfectionism and goodism. Perfectionism and goodism are prevalent among individuals suffering from psychophysiologic disorders such as TMS. And it goes down, goodism is perfectionism on a moral plane. In discussing these behaviors, it is important to distinguish between values and psychological defenses. That's what I was saying. You could see her defenses when she came in. They're written all over. Perfectionism and goodism are defenses aimed at shoring up an individual's sense of vulnerability. Both of them must feel extremely vulnerable. And a perfect person never provokes anger. They're trying to avoid anger provoking because that was something they couldn't do in their childhood. They'd learned this in a very early stage in the development of their personalities. To be perfect and good was a way of avoiding, I imagine, castigation by the parents.
Can anyone relate to Teresa's or Adrian's story, these feelings of needing to be perfect or good?
I do.
Yeah? Tell me about that, if you would.
And everybody hits me on it, too. I need to have my little perfect house. It has to be clean all the time. It has to be decorated just the way I want. I won't go out with somebody unless I feel good, unless I feel 100% at the time that I'm ready to go out. If I feel crappy, I keep breaking appointments. I'm pretty much, I just bought and redid a whole house, and boy, I was like demanding, and people were like, what do you need all this little detail for? I don't fold napkins. I'm not that kind of perfectionist, but I do needlepoint, which is a perfectionist hobby. And when I was employed, I was employed in a job that required perfectionism. I've been a career woman all my life, and I fought the male world, and I always had to be better than the men to get ahead. So I was just like the woman who was the investment banker. I'm very similar to her. And when I was married and I had the job, I didn't have kids, but I had to keep a perfect house and a perfect job. So, yes, I'm just exactly like her.
Excellent. That's what I love about this book, is that you really do start to see yourself in some of these stories.
I'm just listening. So, yes, I'm exactly
like her. Teresa had become a supermom, insisting that her house gleam, that she and her husband sit down to a home-cooked meal every night, when he was just as happy with Chinese takeout food. All the while she was doing this, working 60 hours a week at a high-pressure job.
I did the same thing. I came home and cooked the perfect meal every night, French gourmet, whatever my husband wanted, I did it, and I worked, and I worked, and I traveled as well. So I did that all.
And you mentioned that you had spoken to Monty at one point, and that's something that he highlights, that us TMSers are often strivers.
Yeah, but he gave me his formula for getting better, to think positive. I mean, I've got his formula down. Think positive, do this, do that. Tell me what to do, but that doesn't work for me. I don't like people telling me what to do. It doesn't work. And he doesn't want to listen to And I've got a lot of other problems. I need to talk to somebody about all the crap I've been keeping inside.
That is very true. And I wish that you had the opportunity to talk to Eric or Fran, because they are obviously excellent at that. Can anyone else relate to that perfectionism or the goodism? Do you guys feel this? I definitely feel it in the work that I do on this website. I think I've been known to drive one or two people crazy with my perfectionist streak. But can anyone else relate? Anyone else want to chime in?
Well, I noticed that when I wrote my guidebook to Castle Rock, I attempted to climb the mountain and achieve perfection. Mm. Every detail, every GPS coordinate, every line. And at the end of a year, I figured I had achieved it and I printed it. And now, for the whole year after the publication, I went through the book and noted in the margins every single error I made. And someone told me, well, you could not make that perfect if you did the editing job yourself. And
right.
I said, yes, I did. But I had myself on my shoulder. And now I feel compelled to publish another edition of the book that will include all of the errors I made. Like not publishing it in the right page format, instead using 8.5 by 11 when I should have been using the size of the book, and all of these things haunted me afterwards.
So you have to correct them. It's a compulsion. Exactly. And that, I think, actually is something that Dr. Sherman talks about. So he talks about the difference between something which comes from childhood, which he labels a defense mechanism, and then a choice that you may make, a value, something to do. I know that there are times, and when I look at, for example, my girlfriend, I know that she feels a compulsion. There are times when maybe it goes beyond what you really need to do. I mean, I don't think that necessarily we have to be perfect in order at all, that we need to be perfect in order to have people like us or, you know, get by in the world. But it's something Dr. Sherman has this great part of the chapter where he talks about childhood, and he talks about personality development and cognitive development. So he talks about how children's thinking is undifferentiated. And what I think he means by that is that it's very primitive. Everything is very black and white. And so as he's analyzing Therese and Adrian, he talks about how they had tough mothers. Both of their mothers would, if their daughter asked for attention or for support or for health, the mothers would be very critical of them. They'd say, you're so selfish, and you're a bad person. How could you be demanding attention from me right now? I have to take care of my mother. That was Adrian's mom's story.
Well, Adrian was in an interesting situation in her family, too. She was the youngest of three children. And the older children had developmental problems. The oldest brother was disabled with cerebral palsy, and her older sister exhibited extreme separation anxiety that often required homeschooling. She couldn't get along without mom. And whenever Adrian, location 998, whenever Adrian needed her mother's attention, she was triaged to the back of the line and vilified. I can't believe how selfish you are. Can't you think of anyone but yourself? And this set her up, no doubt, this family situation
yeah.
she was in. It flows downhill to her.
Yeah. So, and one can get a sense of you're a kid and you're trying to reach out to your mom. Teresa's mom was, thanks for bringing that up, by the way. Teresa's mom was alcoholic. So, you know, if you're, or developed, started drinking a lot when she was a toddler. So, Teresa said that she felt like she was walking on a minefield. And both of these kids, for both of these kids, it was almost a matter of survival. I have to be perfect. I have to be good so that I am not essentially emotionally beaten up by this person who I depend upon completely, or even worse, in their mind, they might worry about being left by these people who they depend upon completely, abandoned, which obviously for a child would be absolutely terrifying. And so early on, they learned how to be perfect, and that being perfect is what they needed to do in order simply to survive. And when you learn
that's
a lesson,
that's the way it was in my house for sure. If you put one thing out of place, my father had a photographic memory for everything of his in the house. And if there was one item moved, you were going to get it when he came home. So I learned to never move anything or do anything. I had to behave completely rigidly in the home, or else Big Bad Dad was going to come home and throw a tantrum. Maybe it'd be worse if he came home drunk, and then there'd be really a tantrum. And so I learned very early to make sure nothing was out of place, always covering, walking on eggs, that kind of stress. And I could relate to that with Adrian's situation. Well, it's a common theme. It isn't the cast of characters and the situation is different, but it's still this attempt to be perfect, to be loved by a superego figure that you might be afraid of, too. You know, the odi et te amo, I love thee and I hate thee.
I mean, for me, it was, just to give another perspective, for me, I think it was less extreme, but I think that my father probably, in an attempt to help me, would often point out my... would point out the mistakes that I made. And I think that's perhaps where my personal perfectionism and goodism came from. So I'm interested in hearing a little bit from some of our callers, if anyone is willing to share. The question is, if these personality traits are learned so early in life, many people will read Dr. Sarno's books and say that these traits, they see themselves on every page. How does one unlearn something that is so essential to your survival? What's worked for some people?
Hello.
Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing hey. Well.
This is pretty awesome. This whole discussion group. I'm listening in, and you mentioned how does a person become aware?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
I guess as a person goes through life, I mean, things catch up to you. Things that you got away with prior just aren't working, and sooner or later, the bell gets louder and louder, and whether it be physical pain, I mean, it's more than likely physical pain, and then you're trying to find out the source, and hopefully... You know, for some people, it's a blessing that they're able to see that the source is that compulsion, that flaw in their you called it learning, the what you learned as a child, behavior, something is not right and. And then when you, and I guess that starts the journey. Is that, that begins the journey towards, grabbing hold of, the TMS or the issue, at hand. Whether it be, most people it's physical. You know, it could be a back pain, could be anything.
So that's what kind of triggers a journey of insight, a chance to get to know yourself and learn some of these things, which may have happened a long time ago, but are still, in a big way, running your life.
So something along the line catches up. In other words, you can only get away with it for so long.
Yeah. You were saying, Bruce?
Go ahead.
I think this gets back to a conversation that's been on the forum between Rick R. and Dr. James Alexander about not just going back and finding the isolated emotions, the pure emotion, and experiencing it again, The clue is processing those emotions. You can do your psychological archaeology and find out about the pain or the rage, but then something else has to happen to cure you. You have to process that emotion, which is one thing that Howard Schubiner does with his exercises, moving from pure rage to guilt and shame and on to compassion. That way you're really retooling your program pain pathways. Whereas if you keep going back and finding out about what you felt that night that daddy had a tantrum or the day they were fighting, your parents were fighting or whatever it was, you can find that pure emotion, but you have to change it. Otherwise, it just stays there. You don't actually heal without the processing. That's my point.
And so it comes from processing it, and growth and healing comes from re-experiencing, but also not just re-experiencing. It sounds like you have to move beyond it as well.
You have to process it. You have to change it so that there's another neural pathway established that isn't the same as the original pain that's bugging you. You have to transform it.
Gotcha. So if anybody wants to find the discussion that he's talking about between Rick R. and James Alexander, just go to tmswiki.org/forum, and there's a search box in the upper right-hand corner, or you can just go through the general discussion forum and see it there. For the question of how to change these old learned nerve pathways, these ways of being that we learned when we were very young, perfectionism, it's so deep. I mean, I think that insight can be important, going back and learning about the origins, why it is that we feel the need to be perfectionist. I'm sure that's what worked with Therese and with Adrian. They had to do that deep investigation with a psychoanalyst. I think also time and kind of reprogramming our thought patterns. My bet is that works a lot. For a lot of people as well, or like Bruce was talking about with the ISTDP that Howard Schubiner talks about, that can work as well. Next week we will be doing this all over again. Let's take the next chapter. So this week we talked about perfectionism and goodism. Dr. Sherman's chapters on perfectionism and goodism. And the following week, we will do, anger and self-sacrifice and the lethality of anger. So with Therese and Adrian, they had their chapter on perfectionism and goodism, but they also had a separate chapter on personality development and cognitive development, which was also based on Therese and Adrian. We'll do the same thing with Peter then. Does that sound good?
Okay. I think this one statement that Dr. Sherman makes summarizes Teresa and Adrian's case histories. I think that's on location 1018 in the Kindle. Dr. Sherman says, patients burdened by their needs to be perfect and saintly at all times are not living according to their own personal code of ethics, as much as they are desperately trying to avoid conflict with important people in their lives. And that's where these patterns are learned, these methods of coping. And then Dr. Sherman finishes with the statement, perfectionism is a compulsive and rigid strategy for bulletproofing one's psyche. Is not a useful measure of quality control. In other words, you feel like you're going to be a bad person if you don't do everything perfectly. So you're protecting yourself all the time with these neurotic behavior patterns based on modes of behavior that you acquired before the development of a cognitive ego. Back when you were... from the time you're born until you're six, say. I realize how formative that period is now. From reading Dr. Mate, and from reading Sherman and Anderson, and from reading everybody. It's even the first year of life can set you up for a certain matter, program you for a certain way of coping that's out of all. It's unrealistic. It's like living a fantasy the rest of your life that you acquired during when you weren't really in charge. Making yourself into a robot or an automaton. But anyway, that's about my last two bits on this.
Well, thank you. And a great note to end on. Thanks, everyone, for showing up. I guess I'm going to turn off the recording. I'll keep the call open for another 5 minutes. But after that, we will switch to the chat room at tmswiki.org/chat.